Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Hello and welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, if you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. How goes it?
All right. What's up?
Oh, you know, well, life is good. The weather is cooling off. Yesterday, my roommate got a good size 9-point buck, so we're gonna have like plenty of good venison, like probably about 80 to 90 pounds of venison, and so, you know, good eating. Let's see, just life is calm, and calm is good. So, and of course I'm looking forward to, you know, hanging out with you, maybe if we're lucky, another cool poet or two, and just delving into tonight's poetry. And, you know, so there's some little tidbits about my life and my thoughts. So, all right, well, about this show. So, first of all, we have 4 carryovers from last week, which we'll go through. And then we ran a big contest, and I called it Hands of Surrealism. In the Hands of Surrealism, close enough. And I made it open to pre-writes. And we got like 37 entries in it because I put it for a large amount. Because what I wanted to do was I wanted to run a huge contest. And it had the pictures were a bunch of different surrealism pictures and not all by the same artist that, you know, had included hands in them. And I wanted to run a contest big enough to cover tonight's show and next week's. So, you know, if just so people know that we have a large amount of poetry, we're not going to rush to get through it all because the whole idea is to have enough to split between two different shows. And so with that being said, what do you say, Rex? Shall we get this ball rolling?
Sure. Got on a fire near Omec by Swan Song. It was the night of my 10-year high school anniversary, but I was called out to a fire somewhere near Omec, 200 miles north of my high school near the Canadian border. I spent the night tossing and turning in an old truck made to carry the crew down a gravel road where the side of a dark mountain flared with flames dancing through tall pines. I thought about all those faces still tender in my mind, the girls with big Farrah Fawcett hair because they knew that most of the boys masturbated to a poster in that Ted onesie and those bright blue eyes and white teeth that would never nibble on their necks. The acrid stench of burning pine drifted in the air as a large tree fell into darkness with the crackle of the truck, the whoosh of burning limbs falling through the heavy air, and then the thud that shook the ground. A few of us laughed nervously, and then we lined out with tools clanking and our packs full of fuzzies and canteens filled with water. It would be a long night. Soon the night was filled with the music of saws buzzing into the dark and the chink of hand tools while the devil danced in its yellow cloak, doing what it was meant to do, to consume and burst into the night sky, sucking up air and whirling in small tornadoes that stripped trees naked of their bark. Silhouettes of men and women lined the edge, digging hot line and fighting fire, with flares and drip torches all the way around the fire's edge until the morning came, and 20 men and women, drunk on smoke with bleary eyes and black faces, marched down the fire line they created. Some spoke quietly, but most were silent as they followed each other in a ragged line. The black trees, smoldering naked in the choked sunrise, stood in their silent death, and one small squirrel, unscathed, perched on a log that for some reason did not burn. Somewhere 200 miles south of me, my high school compatriots slept off their drunks from the night before, and I realized then this was where I wanted to be. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. And Swan Song wrote to the quote, "The fire that enlightens is the same fire that consumes." And I like how he took this in a very literal direction to tell us, to bring us into what I'm guessing is a true story. I mean, I could be wrong. He could be making this up. But there's such attention to detail to the time period that, you know, I definitely feel like this is true. And this actually happened in the small town that I lived in. My father, when he was young and, well, you know, like adult young, but like in the late 70s, early 80s, there was a fire and it destroyed that section of the, there was a section that it just completely destroyed. And by now the trees have grown back, but it was, or even as when I was a kid, I remember riding past it and just being fascinated by the bleakness and the darkness. I really like how this isn't just about the fire, though that's the main focus. It's about what life was like then. And he brings in that attention to detail with lines like, "I thought about all those faces still tinder in my memory, the girls with big Farrah Fawcett hair because they knew that that most of the boys masturbated to her poster in that Ted onesie and those bright blue eyes." And then it's not only about the imagery, but he brings in the acrid stench of burning pine drift in the air. So he really brings us into the moment with the smell. Yeah, and I couldn't help but, even though there's a sadness to this poem, there's a message of working together. And then I couldn't help but smile at the image of that one lone squirrel that had survived, though it was at the same time a sad image to consider that how much had been destroyed. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, there was a wildfire out near Omexo, one this year, one last year, so seems that the lightning strikes have a history of running those wildfires. So I would guess this is definitely a true story. Because he also does hit on the notes of, digging hotline of fighting fire with fire, with flares, drip torches all the way around the fire's edge until the morning came. 20 men and women drunk on smoke with bleary eyes and black faces marched down the fire line they created. Again, that note, the fire line, that is something you do work on while you're inside, because you got to create that separation. You know what's going to take, and what the thing is with pine and evergreens, all it takes is the fire to lick at those needles, and that thing goes up in quite a fury. And because of the pine tar that sits in the tree, they burn for days and weeks on end until they're finally gone altogether. But he drips in this of the acrid stench of burning pine, nervous laughs, and then that thought of canteen filled with water getting out and doing their work. So this is about that. And the notation to, hey, was my 10-year reunion not a big deal? Because this is where he really wanted to be anyway, because that's what he was born to do, trained to do, and still does. So great notes to both that and the fact that some things are easy to sacrifice because of what you do on the front lines.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I like that you brought up the importance of the fire line. So excellent observations there, and very well said. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
We got Consummation by Manuel.
All right. Consummation by Manuel. A single spark lit up the darkness, bringing light, warmth to my nakedness. I can finally see all that is around me, the grass, the trees, nature in all its glory. Your touch sends shivers all over my body, a tingling sensation, butterflies in my gut. I don't want to end. Your kisses burn my lips. Your caresses scorch my skin. I am immolated in glorious conflagration as we become one. As we move in this blaze, this dance inferno, we consume each other, our flesh all aflame. As we share each other's shame, still it rages on, never dissipating. Despite the rain of calm quiet falling around us, we gnaw on each other's bones, savoring marrow, not letting go, gluttony at its highest. Until one after the other, we lie broken, shattered, our ashes mingling as the wind takes us both. End poem. I tell you, I really enjoy and appreciate seeing two different poets give, like, just totally different, visions or responses to the same prompt. It is so cool. And Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Lust and carnality converging in and on itself, because she does we share each other's shame. And even in that moment, the lust and carnality still rages on, never dissipating. So the shame is just a brief glimpse behind the the idea in the moment, but it matters not because it's raging. She continues that thought. We gnaw on each other's bones, gluttony at its finest, until one after the other we lie broken, shattered, our ashes mingling as the wind takes us both. That lust, greed, and intensity in the moment that consumes everything and leaves nothing on the back end of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, like you said, you know, it is about that passion that consumes, you know, and destroys. And there is an intensity. I like how this is about that fire of passion and that idea of not being able to get enough of each other. But it comes down to destruction. You know, it comes down to, the gluttony and the greed. And I really liked the last two. I like this all the way through, but especially those last two stanzas. Where it says, we lie broken, shattered, our ashes mingling as the wind takes us both. I also really liked your touch sends shivers all over my body, a tingling sensation, butterflies in my gut. I don't want to end. That stanza speaks strongly on the idea of when that first time you fall in love with somebody or have a desire, like you look at somebody and are attracted to them, and you know the first time you're together. So just a wonderful write and very well done. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
Our Best Version by Adrian 41062. The all-consuming fire of passion, filled by the wanton feeling of hunger. Hunger for a deep enlightenment, a starvation that fills the void, the chasm crossed by a sheer willpower. Once enlightened, none can stop. The hope, love, and joy of growth, passion drives us on to newer heights, to conquer every setback, to engulf the famine that has hindered and entombed every pseudo-fault of deep negativity. In brokenness and hurt, we hang on to the desire to be the best, the best versions of ourselves, end quote.
Great read there, Rex. And this is a wonderful brevity by Adrian. You know, I thought it was a beautiful and thoughtful write on how we keep thriving to become the best version of ourselves with hope, love, and joy and moving forward through trials. And I like that he covered a different kind of passion. You know, a passion to reach your goals, a passion to reach new heights. I did particularly the chasm crossed by sheer willpower. Once enlightened, none can stop. The hope, love, and joy of growth, passion drives us to newer heights, to conquer every setback. And I like that there's a realism to this, that he acknowledges that there are going to be setbacks. They can be conquered. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
It's about life. It's about moving through the muck and the mire and digging in no matter what the setback is or the new height that you get into, because hell, you still got to move more after that, otherwise you stagnate. So the idea is ever moving, ever breathing, ever consuming, and ever learning. So the idea is to, and there's a sense, a touch of a spirituality that walks behind it, but it's only slight. It's not something, and then you Facebook, it's a notation to the thought of oneself as oneself instead of a piece of
I
everything
like that.
Else.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned the touch of spirituality and yet the thought, and you're right that it's really about life. So, wonderful observations. All right. What do we have next?
The fire that enlightens is the same fire that consumes. By poetry cures my soul.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is it my turn to read? Oh, it is. Okay. All right. Yep, you're right. Okay. The fire that enlightens is the same fire that consumes. By poetry cures my soul. I don't brood about the past. I feel sorrow. No time to even dream of the future. My mind is only concentrated on tomorrow because the incisions in my heart don't need a suture. The truth is, I don't know if is to be if eventuated. Life is unforgettable and unforgiven. While living my life, nothing is warranted. There's only one answer, and I've no time for indecision. A passion that edifies my heart is the same passion that breaks it. Yet no one can show me a desire to start. I'm not a believer in miracles, so I quit. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
A little contradictory. I don't brood about the past. I feel sorrow. No time to even dream of the future. My mind is only concentrated on tomorrow. Yet tomorrow is the future. Because the incisions in my heart don't need a suture. It kind of hits on the idea of carrying the baggage that keeps you situated in a singularity. Life is unforgettable, unforgiven. While living my life, nothing is warranted. There's only that again. The next line, also a little off the beaten track too. While living my life, nothing is warranted. There's only one answer, and I have no time for indecision. So again, that note of it's circling back on itself, and then it hits on the passion that edifies my heart. It's the same passion that breaks it. Yet no one could show me a desire to start. I'm not a believer in miracles, so I quit. Again, the decision to do something, yet not doing anyway. So you leave yourself in a singularity where you haven't moved anywhere. So that thought of looking to the future, because you're stuck in today. The idea of not worrying about the past and looking towards tomorrow does not hold itself true because you haven't even gotten out of today.
I like that. And yeah, you're right there. There is a kind of a looping around in itself in those stanzas, you know, and it almost seems to fit with the use of the word indecision, almost like the indecision of, you know, not being able to decide where to focus one's energy. You know, I thought this was a really thoughtful and touching write. It had you know, great rhyme and flow. Yeah, to me, I felt like it was a write on taking the troubles of life one day at a time and feeling the burdens weigh heavy on the body and mind. Hey, that rhymed. I'm a poet, and I know it. All right, but yeah, just an intriguing write for sure with its twists and turns of thought. So very well done. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
We got Rest in Peace Cobain on Acid by Leif Van Amsterdam. It was another long, dark night of the soul, a battle between the id, ego, and superego. It was a wave of anxiety that dumped me, clear as for anyone that knew me to see. I battled insomnia since I was 19. Was it mental illness or depressive reality? But when a hero dies and you take LSD, it's going to be harder to make it to the morning. Up all night, alone at a friend's with the radio, I had to write to purge the words from my soul, filling up blank spaces in a music magazine. I smuggled it out later so it wouldn't be seen. My mate's bro was a metalhead guitarist, young then, but he'd take his dream far as well. The acid was strong, and JJJ slammed Cobain. I put on some death metal to distract the pain. It's one of the saddest deaths I've ever known. Couldn't even read the story in Rolling Stone. a retrospective of a life rudely cut short. It's been 25 years since, but I still love Kurt. And Paul.
Great read there, Rex. You know, I have to say that this is a wonderful tribute to Kurt Cobain, and a sad write on his passing. But I like that it's more than about Kurt Cobain's death and about the effect that it had, but really about the struggles that come with youth. It has a strong emotional impact, and it's very relatable in part. You know, I've battled insomnia since I was 19. Was it mental illness or depressive reality? And I like that he puts that question in there. I think that makes it very relatable, because I think many creative people struggle with insomnia, with mental illness, or grow up in a situation where, you know, the reality itself of their life brings on depression. I also really like where he says, filling up blank spaces in music magazines, I smuggled out layers so it wouldn't be seen. There's a rawness to this, right? And how music has an impact in those times where we struggle physically and emotionally to truly know who we are. I really relate to also, it's one of the saddest deaths I've ever known. And I can, you know, acknowledge that there have been many deaths of very talented people that were extremely sad. But I will say, me personally, and maybe it's because the music of Nirvana, Kurt Cobain, just really touched me in my youth. It was one of the famous deaths that I grieved the most for. But, you know, that's me personally. But excellent write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, it's on the first stanza, a battle between the id, ego, and superego. A thought to Freud up top, and then I battled insomnia since I was 19. Was it mental illness or depressive reality? Again, that question between the sense of self. But when a hero dies and you take LSD, it's going to be harder to make it to the morning. That would depend on the strength of the LSD, true. You can take about a half hour, 45 minutes to before you start peeking, and stay there for 3 or 4 hours, and then to come down. So it could be a very long night, depending on the quality itself. The thought of being alone in a friend's house with radio, and I had to write the purge words to my soul. There's almost a forced note there, filling up blank space in a music magazine. I smuggled out later so it wouldn't be seen. Again, a little touch to Freud, hiding something that you ripped, yet it's something that explains something else in the moment. Maybe the anxiety, the thought was a mental illness or depressive reality, kind of hits a tone there, because right around 18, 19, 20 is where the essence of schizophrenia comes from. Up until then, you might be seen as a little off kilter, or even talented, or a little into yourself. But right around that age, schizophrenia kind of kicks off on its own notes and really digs its heels in, so to speak, before anybody actually gets a note that, yeah, there's an issue there. The thought to death metal to distract the pain kind of also walks on the back end of depressive notes in the moment. And then again, it keeps that thought. Couldn't read the story in the Rolling Stone. Then that thought, it's been 25 years since, but I still love Kurt. So my guess is there might have been some onset of something. The LSD might have helped kick that off, which kind of paints the same role with on the back end with where Kurt's life went. accept Leith as seeing his balance out. Maybe he's gotten, I don't know if this is actually on that realm of reality with him, but it kind of reads it like it does. So maybe he's been able to balance out the chemicality in his brain.
Yeah, that is really great observations. I like that you commented on the LSD part and the idea of, you know, trying to balance out the brain. So very cool. All right. So do me a favor and put up something either that you can read and comment on, or put up the poem by David Philip Ireland so I can play the audio.
All right. Was it Space Cake by David Philip Ireland?
All right, great. I'll go ahead and push play, and here we go. I enjoyed that, but your thoughts, Rex?
Well, I don't know a whole lot, but Paul Annie, it's a baker from Amsterdam, so my guess is the thought with Space Cake is rolling in that avenue of Amsterdam and the weed section that comes out of the, especially the, you go to the festival where you go and check out what's new, what's upcoming, and all that stuff. But it's on Superman Margot Kidder, and what looks like Led Zeppelin in that line below that, or Led Zeppelin. But that might also be something exclusive. I'm not sure about if some of this is actually language that I haven't been able to look up yet, but I'm going to guess it's all about, especially with the hippie, hippie high, hippie, hippie low, and space cake, and the hippie, hippie slow, it's definitely got to do with weed. Not getting the reference between Superman and Margot Kidder, and I don't know Willem de Ridder, and I haven't looked that one up. So I'm guessing it's got a lot to do with Amsterdam, maybe the thought with the Paul Annie and the bakery. Maybe there's something about baking goodies into the food itself. Don't know.
I like that. I like that.
Willem de Ridder is a Dutch anarchist and artist. Okay.
Yes. Well, I just looked up that Ambitia, Dutch pronunciation, Ambitkaj, a little bit, was the winning song of the Eurovision Song Contest in 1959, performed in Dutch by Teddy Scholten.
Okay.
And so the language, and I kind of feared it was because of the mention of Amsterdam, the language there, Ambitia Maal in Bisha Gek, is Dutch. But and I would guess so is a lot of this that is not English. I thought this had a nice rhythm to it. It was playful. It was a nice way of playing and having fun with words. and I have to agree with you that the mention of space cake probably does have to do with Amsterdam being well known for offering up the opportunity to indulge in pot. It was very catchy with the hippie hippie high, hippie hippie ho, hippie hippie high. I know I'm not singing it anywhere near like he did, but it just was kind of one of those songs that really made you want to kind of dance. Made me think of the Swedish band ABBA and some of their songs and how there was just kind of a, I don't know if playfulness is the right word. I'm sure there's a better word, but that's all I can think of. So, fun, right? And very well done. And what do we got next week?
Let's see. Unlock the Garden Gate by Allison Hodges.
All right. Unlock. Oh, wait. Is it my turn?
Yep.
Okay. Unlock the Garden Gate by Allison Hodges. What lies beyond the garden gate? What treasures does the locked wardrobe hold? These questions asked throughout eternity by women young and old. They say Pandora set evil upon the world. I say she released the natural order of things from the bejeweled box in which they were secured. Exploring beyond the acceptable boundaries, women have for centuries taught well that an unexplored landscape keeps us in chains. To open the gate, the door, the box, and face what reality it may reveal is the greatest gift of humanity, an abiding curiosity that sets us free. I thought this one had great imagery and metaphors. I like how it took a different look at the story of Pandora and reminds us of how important the curiosity is for mental and emotional growth. I did like that second stanza that sets up that idea with Pandora. And then the end stanza. I also like that an unexplored landscape keeps us in chains. And that end stanza with the idea that those searching answers for questions, or searching questions for answers or whatever. Just searching, trying to find wisdom, getting out there and trying to find answers is one of the greatest gifts to humanity. So I really like that line and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
What was that book and movie? The Candle Book, Wardrobe, something or other? That's what that open standard reminds me of.
Oh, okay.
Something about the wardrobe. I can't remember what it is. Anyway.
The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe?
Yeah. I'm taking that Pandora motif as not reality, but purity and metaphor, sort of the brain itself, exploring the mind for what the mind offers, but also being aware of there are some things within the mind that if you left that, if you let out of the box totally without some restraints on it, you might regret that order of things. That's what the thought that Pandora offers up in the first place. So you open that box and let everything out, especially those things that you don't want let out, then some things go awry. But especially that, to open the gate, the door, the box, and face what reality may reveal, its greatest gift to humanity, and abiding curiosity that sets it free, yes. But still, there has to be a notation to curbing the appetites within that realm, lest they destroy you on the way out.
I like that. I like that. I like how you saw it, and I can definitely see that a metaphorical level of the exploration of the mind and those things that should be released and those things that shouldn't. So really great observations. What do we have next, Rex?
We have The Last Notes by Thomas B. I have gone out, and I don't see well anymore. I have gone out. There is no desire for the ego to meet the great inflator. Children's toys of size don't fascinate me. Even when they try to scratch the sky, equate size with age. I have gone out. And the railroad is rusting, a thin line for sunsets to follow. My brothers agonizing over the death of steam. My son, the death of diesel. And they trace their dreams on the rust trail as they polish their living room miniatures. The cars have buried New Jersey. It sank, becoming the Atlantic's first coral reef. My generation of venerators call it psychic phenomenon, a fancy equal to New York. Children's toys have a way of escaping the living room. The toys wait in corners, breathing dreams to the child's tactile senses. And when he toy meets she toy, they complete the living tactile sense, green image of a forest, the reflected image of car paint. Who am I to write the great American epic? There is no great American epic. We don't have time for it. As we wrap the continent with strings, each one pulling tighter, we try for a puppet master's control of understanding, agonized by the obliteration of the sun every day. I watch it, fascinated, as it burns itself to death. I have gone out. There is no great American epic for me, perhaps a greater metropolitan epic, or a greater suburban epic, but housewives have cried over most of them, use them as seasoning for nuptial understanding. Who has time for physically masturbate these days? Ginsburg's dirty old man died with the informed youth of today. There is no greater American epic. no film, to profit off its attitude. I have gone out, so has my next-door neighbor, and the black cats in the ghettos who I don't understand. We've all gone out, agony being essential for progress. There is nothing more. Just go out. Just go out. Don't buy a child's toy. Is that legal? March 4th, 1969, dedicated to Jocelyn Brown. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I have to say, I really, really liked that ending. That made me laugh with that question. I just got stoned by a child's toy. I can only imagine the kind of things people have made. Whatever, you know, pot pipes are called, I forget. And I want to apologize because I was so tired. Usually I read poems ahead of time, and today I did not. So I know my comments are always off, but if they're more off than usual, I do apologize. You did a wonderful read there, Rex. And I thought this had some particularly strong lines. And I like that it takes a look at the different generations and what's important to them. I did really like that second part. And the railroad is rusting a thin line for sunsets to follow. My brother's agonizing over the death of steam. My son, the death of diesel. And they trace their dreams on the rust trails as they polish their living room miniatures. I like that he brings up the trains and how the idea of mourning the death and that brings up the larger, the real trains, and then brings up the miniatures. And to me, that speaks on the idea that we're focused on the small picture and not the big picture. Who am I to write the great American epic? There is no great American epic. We don't have time for it. As we wrap the continent with strings, each one pulled tighter, we try for a puppet master's control of understanding. You know, I like that whole idea that there are things we just can't fully grasp, can't fully understand, and yet we try desperately to do so. So, and of course, that line about Ginsberg is brilliant. So amazing, right, and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, it's his bite and interpretation of Ginsberg Howell, just moving it into his generation, so to speak. Since it says 1969, so you look at about 15 years past its original publishing or its original use within the realm as being a performance piece. And he hits on that very same idea. Of what, I have gone out, where Ginsberg, I've seen the best minds of my generation, so to speak. And he's still walking on that angled note, because you got that picture up top, which kind of hits on the elongation of cities into skyline motif. The thought of the death of the steam of steam engines and the death of diesel is that that tracking of generational thought from where we started with the Industrial Revolution and moved on considerably past that, because it did start with the thought of steam and then went to wood and coal and has moved on since. So the idea is the rust in the rails, kind of that long road into the heartland is no longer what it once was. And that third one with the Jersey becoming its first Carl Reeve kind of hits on the notation of Jersey gotten so bad, corrupt, it's sinking would be its only resolution to sanctify what is left of it to become a coral reef. What else we got? Great American Epic kind of hits on that note of walking past the time of greatness, and there's not any more time left for the great American Epic, because at this point, control is starting to illuminate itself. because of all things that are going on in society, the puppet masters, the people at the top of the heap, they're pushing for this and they're pushing for that, and they're rolling it out in such a fashion that most didn't notice it at the time until it was already too late. And by that time, most of them from that era were already gone or dug in or already rolled into society to the point where the only thing that mattered then was money. And then it comes finished. I just got stoned by a child's toy. Is that legal? Child's toy. That could be just a literality of actually getting hit by the kid's toy.
that could very well be. Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that. I thought stoned like, making a pot pipe out of, various objects. And I thought, well, I suppose you could make one out of a toy car or something. But, yeah, you're right. That could be stoned as if the child threw the toy. Really cool observations there, Rex. I like how you made the connection between this rite and Ginsberg's howl and how it speaks on the generational voices. So, excellent comment. And what do we got next?
We have Ocean, Mother of Life by Deb LePen.
Okay. Ocean, Mother of Life by Den the Pen. From the land you have attacked me with your own scabs and poisons, the discharge of your infamy into my womb from whence you came. Even land creatures are my progeny. Some left my breast for horizons to aspire to a landed community, to become as human, cursed be thy name. Yet for untold seasons, I have loved thee and nurtured you for motherly reasons. As I still feed you with my bounty, yet you poison my loving waters without love and without shame. Loving children you will never be, so I must confound your seasons. For my love you have no equity, so I must relinquish you because of your own blame. On the beaches heave the dead trees, the victim of human demons. I must engulf you without pity to save the earth from that of which you all became. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, this is 12 years old. First, walking back in time a little bit to that which still is, it's kind of funny. Used to be, ships who travel the ocean always dump their stuff overboard. Even the cruise ships back in the day would open up their back bay doors and dump their garbage in the ocean. And it's still happening. So that's the general idea within this. But I do like that thought where it's I must engulf you without pity to save the earth from that of which you all became. Engulf without pity. People keep talking about the thought of climate change and what's going to happen, and we're doing all this and that. They don't seem to realize the Earth rolls in cycles, and a lot of cycles nobody bothers talking about because they don't want you to know. We've got it isn't just the 7, the 11, the 25, the 100. We've got cycles that roll in 1,000, 2,000. 11,000 and 100,000 year moats where the earth does its own resituational awareness, whether it's because the confluence of the moon, sun, and Jupiter, which plays great roles on the earth itself because of the notation to gravity and the push and pull, which kind of leaves us as an oval instead of a round. We're egg-shaped because of the amount of pressure that is put on us by Jupiter, as well as the sun on the back end. So there comes times when we have a huge awakening of the earth where its center bubbles a bit more than usual, and we'll run those 100,000-year cycles where we have nothing but massive volcanoes and earthquakes. And hence, with that, you have those notations to a huge landslide, which then throw out huge waves across the planet. So the idea of Earth biting back every now and then is quite true. It's just that it's been such a well-hidden notation that they think we can change it, but it's not a changeable option. It's something that we live and breathe with because it's part of the normal course of things with Earth. Occasionally, she bites back, and she bites back hard.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that on how you spoke on the, you know, the cycles of Earth and, you know, the idea that throughout history, you know, there's always been those. And, you know, I like this personification of the Earth, the voice of Mother Nature. And I like that it does remind us, you know, that she is a powerful force. And I like the line, yet for untold seasons I have loved thee and nurtured you for motherly reasons, as I still feed you with my bounty. You know, I think that's, a wonderful line on, you know, how nature offers up so much for us as far as, you know, nourishment goes. I did like the lines following that, yet you poison my loving waters, because that is true that too often times, you know, into our waters, our rivers, our streams, our oceans, people drop their trash, and it's just a shame. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next?
Respite by Scrap and Scribbles. The night is smashed to bits again. It hit the city's rocks full on and splintered neon through the rain. And asphalt that it fell upon, the day was only heat and dust. It gutted out and then was gone. The moon is layered thick with rust and gave an easy, soothing light. Her arms were full of rainy gusts, but her embrace was cool and bright. She slowed the city's heart rate down, so all sides of all feuds tonight can let their hatred softly drown with all the raging heat of day in whispering drops as soft as down, until the dawn ignites the hay and burns the bastards all away. And pom.
Great read, Rex, and what an awesome write by Scraps and Scribbles. I see this is a terza rima, which I've seen and heard of this form, but I've never actually tried to write it myself. I do like the three-line rhyming stanzas, so I'll have to try this sometime. And, just powerful lines here. I really like the moon is layered thick with rust and gave an easy, soothing light. Her arms are full of rainy gusts. And, I just feel like, again, we've got personification here. And I also like... she slowed the city's heart rate down so all sides of all feuds tonight can let their hatred softly drown with all the raging heat of day and whispering drops as soft as down. That makes me think about the idea how oftentimes people seem to get more aggressive, more violent, the hotter the weather gets. And so really thoughtful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It also bites that notion of all the lunatics come out at night on a full moon. So where was it? The moon is layered thick with rust. I see a blood moon. I forget which month that comes in. February, is it? A blood moon? Anyway, the idea of the blood moon rising to the point where it heats everyone else up as well. But you got the day was only heat and dust and gutted out, and then it was gone. The moon is laid thick with rust and gave an easy, soothing light. Bronze were full of rainy gusts. The idea of moon bringing forth the notion afterwards, when the all the lunacy has abounded for the evening, comes that notion to that which calms out the rest of the eve. But that usually, hey, with that, the sun goes a little bit behind it, the moon goes a little bit behind the clouds, so the lunacy calms down, but also it helps put the drunks to bed. And until the dawn ignites the hay and burns the basses all the way, kind of gives that notion of what people feel like the next morning after rampaging. And, yeah, lots of headaches. Oh, I can't do that again. And the fact that, oh, yeah, my night howling didn't turn out so great.
I like that. And, yes, you're right. Definitely full moons bring out the lunatics, that's for sure. And, you know, there are many times people have said with a hangover, I'll never do that again. And then sure enough, it happens again. Oh, very cool. All right. What do we got next, Rex?
We've got Chakra by Astama Chiba.
All right. So, Chakra by Astama Chiba. Soft sands melting beneath transparent waves, igniting golden flames of the winged sun, provoking thoughts beyond the ordinary, finding the gate that leads to inner realms, spaces of higher consciousness, opening the third eye, home to the sixth sense, intuition and foresight, the center of spiritual power, a mystical and esoteric perception, transcending time, seeing the invisible, creative force of the universe, the true light of insight and poem. I have to say, you know, there are times when people just find, you know, a spot on pre-write to match with a prompt in a contest. And this particular drawing, which has a hand with the eye in the center and the flowers growing around it, I thought this was definitely a great matchup. So very cool with that. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, that hits on that, the seven chakras of being and one's evolution through those chakras, the final being of the seven, that third eye awareness, that realm where one is ready to pass into that idea of perceptive awareness, not of just yourself, but of all things in the world itself.
I like that. Very cool comment. Yeah, I like how this is about seeing beyond the ordinary, of finding that higher consciousness. It's got some really nice alliteration, great choice of imagery. I do like how it is about opening up the mind's eye to new perceptions. I really like the second stanza, provoking thoughts beyond the ordinary, finding the gate that leads to inner realms, spaces of higher consciousness. Just powerful lines and very well done. All right, Rex, what do we got next?
Seers, Saints, and Sages by Eric Swenson. Harsh reality, grappling with duality, born of water, we're handed down to become landlubbers. Mark the seer's ancient hands, mighty ocean clasped with intense firm grasp. Hear the conch shell call to arms. Turquoise stones, transistor coal mermaids. Porpoises dance upon healing waves. Healing energy penumbras radiate far and wide. Harsh reality, grappling with duality, shaped out of clay. We earn pitch. Pour our bread upon ageless waters. Wondrous nonetheless, we ever always expand. Saints in the making, stilted but never jilted, jinxed but mostly jubilant. Turquoise sage once whispered, close by wave castanets and seagull cha-cha, take life with a pinch of salt, dear one. Humdinger dubious, yet ever always curious, palmistry mask mysteries. She smiled, smudged an initiate. Take life with a pinch of salt, my dear. Tickled pink, memory bank suddenly passes on me on hand-me-down. Wherever an answer was sought, a teacher came. Harsh reality softened, dancing with duality more than grappling. Born of spirit, a landlubber porpoise ponders beside the ocean. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. Yeah, I really love the imagery that he brought into this one, how he took from the picture, which is a pair of like elderly hands wearing turquoise jewelry, just like in front of an ocean and a sky, like floating above the ocean. And I like the line in the beginning, born of water, we're handed down to become land lovers. I like how that speaks on how water is such an important part of our life, and yet even it's like most of our body is water, and yet we don't acknowledge the importance of it. I like the harsh reality grappling with duality shaped out of clay. You know, it's very cool that he brings in clay because, you know, besides, you know, the acknowledgement of the biblical story of, you know, the creation of Adam, it also makes you think of the fact that water, or, you know, that clay is in itself a duality. It is a mixture of water and earth. Let's see. Turquoise sage once whispered, take life with a pinch of salt, dear one. You know, sometimes one generation can pass on to the next such words of wisdom. There's so many, there's just really clever lines in here in that discovery of one's fluid nature. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
It is the nature of us in the universe, or in our universe, so to speak. Born of water, become land lovers, so to speak. The idea of the connection between us and the ocean. That which it, that note to where it is, and hear the conch shell call to arms, a notation to bring the conch shell to ear, and hearing the ocean within its echo. And yes, there is that. You can sit on the beach and hear the waves call. There's a nice relaxing tone to it, plus the undertow of being drawn there to begin with. The healing energy, the relaxation note of hearing that whispered release of energy upon the beach, and then the rush back out again. It's almost as if the ocean is breathing itself and teaching you at the same time. Breathe in slowly, then breathe out again. And then it hits harsh reality, grappling with duality, shaped out of clay. Again, thoughts of how we are shaped out of clay, so to speak. But that's just the filler with the water to make the body what it is. The Wondrous Mandalas kind of hits on the idea of humanity as a whole. Again, close by, wave cast nets and seagull, cha-cha, take life with a pinch of salt, dear one. It's kind of turquoise sage once whispered. The turquoise sage kind of hits on the note of that wristband he's got on right there, the large one, which kind of looks like a mandala in the first place, but it's offering up a note in the moment, the whisper of the ocean itself, the call to the ocean, and the fact that take life with a pinch of salt is what you get when you look at the water. You taste the water, it's salty, so there's a little touch of duality in that note as well. And then tickle pink, memory bank suddenly passed on a hand-me-down. Whenever an answer was sought, a teacher came. That teacher might, in that deference of moment, could be the wind tickling at your ear, the ocean speaking to you, a combination of both. And then the idea of born a spirit, land lover porpoise ponders beside the ocean. Land lover porpoise, us. Those people would go to the ocean or into the water to swim. So there's that idea of being the land lover porpoise. And also, again, that note, take life with a pinch of salt, my dear. A remembrance of notes, something that you should pass on as a teacher to the next generation.
I like that. I like that. Very cool. All right. What do we got next?
Cuddling the Gray Shades of Life by Rhonda Yosemite.
All right. Cuddling. Oops, hold on. Let me sit up a little better. All right. Cuddling the Gray Shades of Life by Rhonda Yosemite. Along the bottom of sorrowness, craggy, murky ravine runs happiness, cascade, swirls, and forces its way through prosperity's valley. Sometimes life stands on the edge and discloses a mystic pathway into light's dreamland, or when her feet detach great fragment of rock, she falls, crashing her way through the savage forest clan depressions, mountain down into darkness chasms. Life has to sail through the crystal icy fingers of negativity's mist rising from the turmoil's cold winter that create hindrances to follow up the bank and leave the challenges shallow, shore away from danger zone. Whenever the sun goes down, dusk and dawn break the skyline. Keep sailing. Don't settle at one side of right or wrong. Sometimes hope's wind makes wonders too, and life's boat is pushed on its own, be it black or white. Balance it with acceptance's shades of gray. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts.
Duality. Sense of yin and yang, the front side to the back side of the coin. There are always two things, yet there lies within the middle those little touches of gray, the gray areas, which do not exactly sparkle in either a black picture or a white picture, so to speak. They are those outer edges of things that you don't notice, that which creeps up and slaps you in the face, because you didn't pay attention to the fact that you got crystal icy fingers of negativity and a cold winter that creates tendencies. But on the other side of that, you have the warmth which opens up, and then the heat which can consume. So the idea of balancing life itself through its proper functioning of light and dark, good and bad, opposing and opposite, so to speak, but they all walk within their own realms, but they do not exist without each other. You can look at one side of the coin; it's a head, but you need the back side, which is the tail, to actually complete the notion. You need the moon to complement the sun. You need cold to offset heat, and you need heat to offset the cold. They balance each other. But it's the little things that walk on the other side of that, those little shades of gray, which offer up those moments which you should take notice of. Otherwise, you get lost in those moments, and all of a sudden, you find yourself frozen out or boiling.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And, yeah, that is very true. That, you know, we need that balance. But, you know, we also need to see those different areas of gray, that life isn't always black and white. There are things that we can miss. I really like the imagery in this. I especially like sometimes life stands on the edge and just closes a mystic pathway into light's dreamland. The idea that sometimes we can be shown things that we never expected to see. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Not that one. Weaver. Laugh by Weaver.
All right. Dreams. Okay. And we have a SoundCloud for that, so I will go ahead and find that and push play.
You may call me a fungi, let rip, as I enter stage left with a clip. My purpose is clear, to bring smiles and cheer, and wild laughter whenever I trip. I juggle, tumble, sing a song for you, do conjuring tricks, cut a lady in two. My repertoire is vast, from the first to the last. My sole aim is to ensure that it's new. Now I fear my royal audience has shrunk. There are only three families and a drunk. Makes no difference to me, be it 300 or three. Let me see what I can find in my trunk.
Great read and white, great read and write, Weaver. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, then the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice and your thoughts, Rex.
Oh, let's see. Well, it hits on the thought with laugh is one thing, but the idea is giving those people their due instead of trying to take the fun out of life by telling comics what they're allowed and not allowed to do actually constricts the idea of what it's about to begin with. Because if you can't make fun of yourself or others in pointing out that which is, then you're taking the joy out of life and letting the laughter through. The idea of this is that first dance kind of hits on that note of slapstick to bring smiles. To bring smiles and cheers and wild laughter whenever I trip. I touch a slapstick motif. I thought to work what you found within the 20s through the 50s. The idea of slapstick comedy. I juggle, tumble, sing a song for you. I'm going back a few hundred years, even earlier, to the jesters. And again, now I fear my audience is drunk. That can work from back then all the way up to today. Be it 300 or three, let me see what I find in my trunk. That idea of, hey, there's always something, one little rabbit won't pull out of a hat to generate a laugh for whatever the reason or purpose or occasion.
Absolutely, absolutely. And yes, I like how your comment in this right touches on the importance of stand-up comedy and the voice of it throughout history to laugh at and bring to light issues. Yeah, I like that this is a tribute to the physical comedy. I juggle, tumble, sing a song for you, do conjuring tricks, cut a lady in two. My repertoire is vast from the first to the last. My sole aim is to ensure that it's new. And I like the rhyme and flow in this, and I like that it's about the entertainment, you know, value of you know, the variety show or the person who could put on the variety act. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
An Old Woman's Hands by Julie Buck. She always had long, long straight hair from childhood to wrinkled old age. But never a girly girl, seldom did hair things, never even learned how to braid. A wash-and-go woman, easy, breezy, and turning 60, made her think, how weird it is to be old. Nary even a gray hair, 80, the new 60s, her fingers swollen from arthritis, dry and cracked from wear. She didn't care. Time to remove one more thing from her bucket list. Ouch. Turquoise waters make their own noise. This seaside visit's for you, my pet. Because it's pain for me, that can't be dismissed. More theme time yet? And Paul?
Oh, my gosh. You know, Julie has such a raw, biting, you know, sardonic sense of humor with hard-hitting lines that I truly appreciate. And wonderful read there, Rex. Yeah, I like how this takes us, as the beginning says, from childhood to wrinkled old age and brings in the story of this woman. You know, I like the lines, a wash-and-go woman, easy breezy and turning 60, made her think how weird it is to be old. She didn't care. Time to remove one more thing from her bucket list. Yeah, I like this, the idea of somebody who, you know, yes, life, the body is starting to hurt and, you know, dry and cracked from wear and dealing with arthritis. But it's time to move forward and, you know, check something else off the bucket list. But that question, morphine time yet, was definitely relatable. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, the last stanza and the last line are offset. They're different. And they have to be because it's all an illusion at this point. The thought to the bucket list has me thinking of a recording of ocean and beach waves coming towards the beach. Ouch. That's in big letters. So there's a noticeable note of pain there. And that's not because of the turquoise waters that you hear make their noise. This seaside visit for you, my pet, that is the nurse offering up. The ouch is the patient herself, the 80-year-old, and because it's pain for me, that can't be dismissed. That notion, there's a significant, that line hits on both ends, both the patient and the nurse administering, and the question comes from the patient herself. Morphine time yet? Because there needs to be a noticeable pleasantry within those turquoise waters, and you can't get that with pain. So the idea is a little bit of morphine in the drip and a little bit of that's found to help relax the patient and put them into that bucket list motif.
I like that. Very cool. Yes. Yeah, definitely. And that makes sense. So, all right. And what do we got next?
Below by Mermaid.
All right. Below by Mermaid. Waterfalls of treasure, white spray paintings, the chalk flints of nature where rocks deep split wide open like staunch blackboards, once strong, now broken, furrows that drown out a ditched worm hunt. Haunt in a sun glint of despair, silky, slinky neon springs, folding sky-bound rings, valley tall sunsets, surfacing in between, stalking foxes, remote like moles, rarely sprung from underground dens. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's definitely a different look at the picture itself, but I like the idea of the offset, the note of the nature, the note of nature, time making opportunities of things, the chalk flints breaking apart where rocks deep split wide open like staunch blackboards once strong now broken, that offering where nature makes its own happenstance over eons, furrows that drown out a ditched worm haunt in a glint of some glint of despair, a search for the treasure that's found there, the worm haunts, or more actually, that which goes in for the worms. And then that thought with the remote-like moles stalking foxes. So the idea of all of a sudden you've got nature giving of itself over eons to that which comes to naturally to the animals that fall within that environment.
I'm sorry. Great comment. I like how much she said in only 60 words. I know this had powerful lines to it. Brilliant imagery. I thought the surrealism style that she writes in here works really well with the picture and with the contest. I especially like the line, furrows that drown out a ditched worm haunt in a sun glint of despair, slinky neon springs holding skybound wings. Wonderful imagery there and wonderful idea of, a ditched worm haunt makes me think of death. So excellent write and very well done. All right, what do we got next?
Became of the Deer Beast by Blue Wright 76. What became of the beast, a hungry creature that roamed the deserted lanes, where his peers refused to tread, when he raced ahead to discover the taste of the unsung victory, while knowledge secretly found him and blooms thrived. Inside pulsing veins, thither roots found earth's deep shoots in passionate growth, reached out to the skies, invisible glory and heights, soared his spirit in elation. What found him then to forsake his search, caged within the walls? Did he start seeking their word more, addictive waters, approvals, and appreciations, chain and inhibit his cravings, while voice grew, within grew mute? Urban boxes that sought steel, not flowers that feed roots with pride, papers and coined crowns, glory tumbling, never posterity fed, did they deprive him his fruitful endeavors? Or did they give him all little baskets that sailed across, decked on electric belts, perfect steady flow, not to wait for him at all, just grabbed son's thought, fruits from those machines, polished and shining like Snow White's apples, sucked life off his gardens, stems seeking those mugged roots soaked in black waters. Slow death sons the adventure, docked unto the black concrete. Did he bleed on keyboards while the tiny curious bird fighter in the urban skies stood tilting its graceful neck on the immaculate dark windows, whistling to him to come hither, feed him a morsel, gardens where the sun can feed his drying paint? Does he know now, save his many do come for his seeker's core? And poem.
Great read, Rex. A wonderful write by Blue Wright 76. Strong imagery. I like how it speaks of the search for life and meaning amongst pollution. I really like the lines, or did they give him all little baskets that sailed across decks and on electric belts, perfectly ready, steady flow, not to wait for him at all, just grab sans thought, fruit from these machines, polished and shining like Snow White's apples. You know, the mention of Snow White's apples and the idea of the poison, and I think it just really speaks well on the whole idea of the poisoning of a food supply because of, wanting to make everything bigger and better and mass produce. It's just definitely a thought-provoking and intriguing write on the production of food and a planet being destroyed. So very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's the deletion of growth, the delineation of man himself. Those first two stanzas offer up the the joy of actually walking into this atmosphere full of engagement, amazed, awe-inspired, so to speak, because he's walking those places everyone else refused to go, looking for the new things, and the blooms thrived in the moment. Then Invisible Glory and Heights Sword and Spirit Elation fans were all about the moving into. The next comes at him with the next bat. All of a sudden, he's finding himself becoming part of that oneness, so to speak, seeking their word more, addictive waters, approvals, and appreciations, chain and inhibit his cravings, while voice within grew mute. All of that which made him is now dissipating. Urban boxes, the thought of large cities, the concrete jungle, so to speak, all of that and everything else in between, the thought of buying fruit from a nice shiny machine rather than picking off a tree, the idea of all these man-made edifices packing millions and millions of people into a singularity is taking the life out of people, because there's no growth, there's no aspiration to walking in the parks, getting sun, getting to know people, because everybody lives too damn close to on top of one another in little cubicle ice boxes in the summer and hot boxes in the winter. And then that last one, the slow death, sounds the adventure. At this point in time, everything has been sucked out of the guy. He's just become another little artifact in a place where you go to die, where your dreams go to dematerialize, where life gets sucked out of you because the city sucks it out of you. The idea of the bleed on keyboards while the tiny curious bird fighter in the urban skies stood his tilting graceful neck, the dream of what he once was, on the immaculate dark windows, whistling to him to come hither, feed him a morsel. Again, that little blue bird of happiness that once flew within still pecks, as you hit on that feed his dying plant, the idea of spirit and a sword. And then that last three lines, does he know now, save as many do come for his seeker's call? Idea of maybe not giving in to the way of vanity, and maybe it's time to seek a little bit more fruitful plane where one can breathe once more and have that opportunity beyond the ridgelines of a dark jungle.
Amen to that. Great comment, Rex. And what do you have for us next?
Let's see. Oh, I just did that one. And
Decisions.
Here we go. Concrete Rome by Diane D.
All right. Oh, she has a SoundCloud. You know what? Let's go ahead and save this one. I'm sorry, but since she did make a SoundCloud and we're doing two parts and I didn't get it up, let's go ahead and save this one, if you don't mind grabbing another one.
All right.
Do, 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 do.
Connect to Your Feel by Rain 474.
All right.
Sure.
Okay. Connect to Your Feel by Rain 474. Not an octopus, but a pentapus she is. With its tentacles, she holds articles, performing miracles far away from each other. the lock serves to gather, being far beyond any bother, while the sovereign, open hands holding the keys to all strands, conjoining the two of the same brand, releasing the river of choice that has the elixir of voice, playing the meditative noise, relaxing the stressed soul, filling with the soothing call until making safety to bank wall. But at times in rage, I get lost in encephalous maze, caught up in wishes to cage, and closed my tentacles to captivate the oceanic oracle that has words from chronicles. Witnessing the new glory, captivating water is tricky as it becomes the fall fiery, refusing the subjugation, voiced in the name of commission, stealing the service she holds as a mission. But to a humble, toughened trout, to a humble, trowed hand, she submissively goes and stands, entwining with their cognitive strands. Power kills, humbleness heals, keeping connected to your emotional feels. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's both literal and metaphorical in its thought to the title, Connect to Your Field. Not an octopus, but a pentacles. Tentacles, old articles, performing miracles, all in arrangement with hands. Far away from each other, the locks serve together, being far beyond any bother, while the sovereign open hands holds the key to all strands, conjoin the two of the same brand. Again, thought to the feel, physical, within hands. Then I thought, releasing the river of choice as the elixir of voice, playing the meditative noise. That kind of hits me with almost a tone of musicality in itself, relaxing the stressed soul, filling with a soothing call until making safety to blank wall. There is a kind of note to sound offering up that tone, drawing into the note of feelings now, not just the thought of feel with hands, noticing the tactile response. And then there's the feel that comes with rage. I get lost in encephalous maze called and wishes to cage. Again, both the angles runs on the feeling, from not just from tactile, but also from the inside of this one. Then again, to eyesight, again, feel it with your eyes, feel it with the notation to your hands, feel it inside, feeling, again, with the back end of this. Power kills, humbleness heals, keeping connected to your emotional field. Again, both literal and figurative and metaphorical.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And I definitely see how this speaks on those emotions that we experience. I like how this, to me, speaks on the idea of how we have a choice when it comes to how we react to things, releasing the river of choice that has the elixir of voice, playing the meditative noise, was really great lines. And, so really just wonderful, thoughtful lines. I like how this is has that mention near the end of, power kills, humbleness heals, and the importance of having a humble heart. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
10 digits by Poetic Creations. I was infatuated and she was the bomb, blowing up to let me see every bone in both my hands. Many sets of eyes witnessed the Holocaust. There were also some solitary peepers. I was witnessing the dark side on the inside of all mankind while smiling on the outside. Turned off insides by society, yet still shocked by a nuclear blast, blasting in the future even though it was born in a long past. Cogs and gears drive chain that drives chain, driven by one human's hand, amputated by the dawn of industry. plutonium, uranium, nuclear rain, DEFCON 1 in the corner of every eye and every ear left, listening to what is rarely ever right. Thick toxicity worms around inside of shrunken heads, attached to ghostly bodies not quite dead, tossing and turning, they're dying, trying to count somewhere past the number 10 before that final countdown, counting down from 10, finally ends. End quote.
Great read there, Rex. Really great imagery and just strong, impactful lines. I like that he makes them short. I like that this starts out on a personal level with I was infatuated and she was the bomb blowing up to let me see every bone in both my hands. The idea of being fascinated with a person that basically destroys us. But I like how it goes into, and it could still be on a non-nuclear. Sorry, I was looking at the word. It could be on through all the way through on a personal level and metaphor, but I like that he uses the different atrocities throughout history, you know, the Holocaust, the nuclear blast, the dawn of industry, and how, you know, at first that was just an amazing thing, and then, you know, it became a sense of self-destruction, a sense of poisoning, plutonium, uranium, you know, nuclear rain, DEFCON 1. And within those lines, I think of the idea of the girls that glowed, the uranium women or the uranium girls?
They were the radium girls. They were the ones that were putting radium in the watches for the and they were as they were doing it on, they were they'd lick the paintbrushes to keep them moist, not realizing they were also swallowing radium in the motif, and nobody in the factory understood
exactly
why they were losing their head and bleeding and losing teeth.
Yeah, no, I knew that. I knew that part. I just couldn't think of the right word. But yeah, you're right. The fact that they were like wearing it as makeup, licking the ends of the brushes, even putting it on their dresses for when they went out at night, and not realizing that they're poisoning themselves. So, but yeah, this is a powerful write on this destruction of the self, but also destruction of the society through poisons offered up. And your thoughts, Rex?
It reminds me of The Strange Love, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, because it bites at the notion of how this came about. Because you got that note up top, I was a fashion, she was the bomb blowing up to it. Let me see every bone in both my hands. The idea that Oppenheimer in that moment, I have become the destroyer of worlds, from the Bhagavata notion to the idea of things in a different life. It's on the back end of this. I think he's walking into the idea of that countdown, because he hits on that 10 digits, but the countdown he's offering up is 10. That figurative notion before one presses the button that launches, and also that countdown figuratively from 10 to 1 when the bomb hits and then there's nothing.
I'm glad you brought up the countdown, I think that's an important part of the poem. So very cool. And what do we got next?
To the Girl in the Brick Wall by Orange Sage. And that one's yours.
Oh, okay. Hold on, let me just finish a short sentence here. All right. To the girl in the brick wall by Orange Sage, don't just break out brick by brick, crash through, both eyes on fire, throw a blue ball up and call it earth, watch it floating on the universe's tide. Listen to the quiet quiver and unfurling of wings. Dare to take on Mars, Jupiter, the moon. Heed all five senses, untangling your hair with a star, and sing a celebration, living as a thread of the Milky Way. Feel the weight of clouds, their wind-blown rainy wave and thunderous overtures lift from around you. And now that you can do the butterfly dance, sit yourself down on the moon's edge, your legs swinging into new worlds, hair free-flying and burnt treacle cords. Sing, Diva. Keep singing. End poem. And I really like that one. That one's just got some really clever and thoughtful imagery. And your thoughts, Rex?
It had me thinking of the that movie, The Fifth Element, with that thought, sing, Diva, keep singing. Remember that the blue lady in the middle of that movie with all the tentacles had, because she drops in the thought of the Milky Way and then offer up the butterfly dance and dare to take on Mars and Jupiter on trailing wings. The idea of Milky Way kind of hits on that notion of walking on new worlds, because supposedly within our own universe, the Milky Way, there is something like 5 billion planets which have the capacity to be just like us. So it brings out the notion, what else is out there that we know not of now, but they might know of us?
That is so true. That is so true. And we have to be open-minded to the possibilities of what is out there. So I like that observation. You know, I like that this is a rite of empowerment, a rite of creation, a rite of exploring with the senses. I like that. The moon, heed all five senses, untangling your hair with a star, and sing a celebration, lift as a thread of the Milky Way. I like that this speaks on the idea that we are a part of the big picture and an important part. You know, I really like the phrase burnt treacle cords. You know, the whole idea that burnt, you know, that dark molasses that, you know, the if I remember right now, treacle, the part of molasses, right?
It's the purified angle. It is golden in color.
Okay. So it's, I see. That works really well, those golden cords. But, yeah, wonderful imagery, wonderful sense of reaching for one's dreams, of the possibilities that are out there. So beautifully written and very well done. What do you have for us next, Rex?
All right. Bestiary of the Hand, Crown Cinquain Number 1 by Laughing Wolf. Mutant, pivot tyrant, hitch a ride for the rest, the solace suckle of newborn babies. Lead on, Polaris Star, El Numero Uno, a long barrel of a toy gun, blow smoke. Ship mast, primal ballast, pinnacle obelisk, in a row of idle tombstones, birds flip. Adorned, penultimate, haven for sacred vows, bikini tan made by faithful shadow. Imote, Omega Wolf, pygmy car lost in line, at the funeral procession, tears fall. And thought.
This is, that was a wonderful read there, Rex. This is an extremely clever write. First of all, I like that background picture you chose. The hand with the little, the monster as finger puppet. It's good to see Laughing Wolf back on All Poetry and sharing poems. It's really cool and clever that each stanza represents a different finger, different hand, thumb, index, middle, ring, pinky. Strong use of imagery. I really particularly like lead on Polaris star, El Numero Uno, a long barrel of a toy gun, blow smoke, and then ship mast, primal ballast, pinnacle obelisk. I've always liked the use of the word obelisk in a row of idle tombstones, birds flip. And that was just a clever ending line for the stanza about the middle finger, birds flip. Very cool. Excellent, right? And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Actually, it is quite the thought. Should have left out the thought with the notations. Keep people guessing, because you could work it out real easy. Pivot tyrant, hitch a ride for the rest, the solid suckle of newborn babies. That's easily a thought to the thumb. And the numero uno, long barrel of the toy gun, and blow smoke, again, an easy notation. I did like that third one, though. Primal ballast, pinnacle obelisk in a row of idle tombstones, which was a nice touch to the with the bird's flip for the middle finger. And the back end of this with the pygmy car lost in line at the funeral procession, tears fall. Another great back end, but especially the bikini tan made by Faithful Shadow. That would make people think on that note itself, but I like it. It's different, very different.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that part you brought up about the bikini tan. That was really cool. So, great comment there. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
All right. All right, Third Degree Burns by T. Michelle.
All right, Third Degree Burns by T. Michelle. And it goes like this. I have long drafts, but no courage. I might get worn from promising you things I do not mean. So I let the silence in between speak. Symbolic smoke covers the irises that dwell on mooncakes at the cemetery, where April mixes well with gnawing hunger, and the shadow withdraws from my tongue. Nothing more will grow, so I'll draw the fury of her lips, capturing her drowsiness like codeine-induced sleep. She'll shy away, recoiling like a taciturn child that sees no further than the contours of a question mark slithering between the temples towards the shoulders. We both breathe the gathering storm, but she comes out alive, more than a human, less than a person. As her smile doesn't quite reach the knit of her forehead, she's neither circles nor lines, too plebeian, yet almost abstract. Then in the shallow dimples of a naked room, her crystal ice skin begins to crumble, revealing the graft underneath. She flashes the vial of how she really looks, wounds unaccounted for, paths seldom walked, and bile rises in my throat as quickly as it recedes. Trembling, I lift her veil, jabbed by the mouths of a thousand needles. End poem. I tell you, T. Michelle always impresses me with her imagery and metaphors. This is an amazing write. And your thoughts, Rex?
A blistering vein of that which lies between two people. And the opening gives you that note. I have long drafts but no courage. I might get worn from promising you things I do not mean. So I'll let the silence in between speak. Oof, a cold notation. That, yeah, this life ain't doing either one of us any good, yet we're still hanging in there for some odd reason. I like to throw the mooncakes in the cemetery. That's a different thought, and also the eye-opening touch to mooncakes. And the shadow withdraws from my tongue. I'm going to speak, but decide not to. Nothing more will grow, so I'll draw the fury of her lips, catching her drowsiness like codeine-induced sleep. Ooh. Kind of a tired a little notation. And the thought of acting like a taciturn child as the her features get contorted to the point you know it ain't going to be an easy evening. And points to that. We both breathe the gathering storm, but she comes out alive more than a human, less than a person. Boy, that offers up the singularity of the explosiveness that's going to come, because less than a person offers up the purity of the ugliness in the humanity angle coming forth. She's neither circles nor lines. Kind of hits on notion of tensity. Then that crystal ice skin begins to crumble, revealing the graft underneath. Ooh, boy, is that paint ugliness. And the vial of how she really looks. Ooh. And bile rises in my throat as quickly as it recedes, swallowing one's own words once more. Trembling, I lift her veil, jabbed by the mouths of a thousand needles. That kind of hits at the notion of wedding day and reality dawning. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely got that. Really great comment there, Rex. Yeah, I like how this looks at the ugliness of someone underneath that they try to hide, but that eventually comes out. I really like the imagery. And then in the shallow dimples of a naked room, her crystallized skin begins to crumble, revealing the graft underneath. You know, and she flashes the vial of how she really looks, wounds unaccounted for, path seldom walked. Such a strong lines on the revelation of self. So excellent write and very well done. You know, great show tonight, Rex. Thank you very much. Thank you to Victoria and Pee Wee for hanging on the board and to fill my eyes for all she does in the background. Join us later tonight with Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company and Part Sinner, Part Sins with Faziana and Babbler. And, of course, you know, make sure to check out all the poetry contests and topic boards put out by Late Night Poets, hosts and hostesses for our shows, because you're sure to find something to inspire. Have a good night, Rex. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night, everybody.